the May 20th, 2021 Planning and Zoning Commission meeting to order. Mr. Tuohy, may we have roll call, please?
Yes. Mr. Stanton?
Here.
Ms. Galloway Jones?
Here.
Ms. Rushing?
Here.
Ms. Russell?
Here.
I'm here. Ms. Burns?
Here.
Ms. Carroll? Ms. Lowe?
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. Mr. Zenner, are there any adjustments or additions to the agenda?
Oh, hold on one second. Mr. McMahon, I missed you.
Present.
Thank you. We still have a quorum.
We have eight now. A bigger quorum. Mr. Zenner, any additions or adjustments to the agenda?
No, there are not, ma'am.
Thank you. We did not approve the work session minutes, so we're going to start with that. Ms. Russell.
I move to approve the work session minutes from the last work session.
Second.
Second by Mr. McMahon. I'll take a thumbs up approval on that. Looks unanimous, abstention. Except for one abstention. All right, then we have the minutes from the May 6, 2021 meeting.
Move to approve.
Second.
Second by Ms. Russell. I'll take a thumbs up approval on the meeting minutes. Unanimous with, or all seven yes, one abstention. Okay. Before we get into the case, I just want to pass along the word that we have new laptops that if you don't move the mouse, it will go to sleep on you. So move your mouse around during the meeting. Okay. First case, subdivision, case 134, 2021. A request by Central Missouri Professional Services on behalf of Eastland Hills Development LLC for a one-lot final plat of approximately 0.8 acres of property to be known as Eastland Hills Plat 8. The property is zoned mixed-use commercial, MC, and is located on the east side of the T intersection of I-70 Drive Southeast and the Upland Creek Road. May we have a staff report, please?
One moment. We have a little bit of a technical issue that we can work with on the fly here, and we're hoping that it won't be an issue in the rest of the presentation. But yes, I'm happy to give a staff report. So this is case 134, 2021. It's a final minor plat to be known as Eastland Hills Plat 13. It's approximately 0.8 acres. This is previously unplatted property, which is why a final minor plat is before this body for a recommendation. If it had been previously platted and it was a final minor replat, it would go straight to council because there are no design adjustments requested. So the property is 0.8 acres. It is split zoned between MC, mixed-use commercial, and MN, mixed-use neighborhood. You can kind of see here on the screen that this is the area that's MN. Given that the gross preponderance of the site is MC, we don't really anticipate the split zoning will be an issue, but just how we typically address that with split zone parcels, you can have MN uses on the MN zoned piece and MC on the larger MC zoned piece. It's all commercial for the record. I sent two rounds of advanced information postcards on April the 14th and April the 29th. The reason I did two versions was the meeting on which this was scheduled was moved back just to allow for some additional technical review through the process. So I let folks know that that was the case. And I sent 10 postcards on both occasions. So to orient ourselves to the site, this is Upland Church Road right here. This is I-70 Drive Southeast. We've had some more recent zoning and platting cases kind of here off to your screen a little bit to the west. This is the Phillips 66. You've got the Lake of the Woods intersection over here, and then this is the Lynx apartment complex across the way. So the desire for the final plat is to bestow legal lot status to allow for development of the tract. As I mentioned, it is split zoned, and so any uses under that zoning category, either MC or MN as applicable, would be permitted on the site subject to the use-specific standards for whatever use was desired, in addition to any neighborhood protection standards, buffering, tree preservation, and landscaping provisions called for by the code. I have had a couple questions from the neighborhood association and from a neighboring property on what was going to go on the site. I believe it's going to be a church, but nothing has been signed. I don't have any building plans in front of me. So at this point, I can't fully confirm that. But that is what we believe is desired to go there. There were some concerns that a liquor store might go there, and I did have to be very truthful that by the zoning, a liquor store would be permitted, but there would still be buffering, use-specific standards, et cetera, if that were the case. The plat meets all standard platting requirements, such as the dedication of a 10-foot utility easement adjacent to Upland Creek and I-70 Drive Southeast. There is adequate right-of-way already on the site, and there is sewer extending to the southern portion of the site. In the staff report, I made a comment that Survey was still completing their technical review of the draft that was included for the agenda. They have since finished their review. They did not have any additional revisions or corrections, and so you do not need to make your recommendation subject to technical corrections. We do believe that the plat that was included in the agenda is actually fully compliant, which is a good thing. So as such, because we believe the plat is fully compliant with the UDC, we are recommending approval of the Eastland Hills Plat 13 final plat this evening. The applicant is here should you have any questions of him, and I'm happy to answer any questions as well.
Thank you, Ms. Bacon. Before we move on to questions for staff, I'd like to ask any commissioner who's had any experte related to this case to please disclose that now so all commissioners have benefit of the same information on behalf of the case in front of us. Seeing none, are there any questions for staff? Mr. McMahon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Planner Smith, can you help me? I'm having a little trouble seeing this. What's the minimum width approximately of the MN zoning on the south section of the property?
Sure.
I read the
about length. 11 feet.
About, okay, that's kind of what I thought it was. A follow-up question. When this is built out, if we have, can we have a structure across that mixed-use zoning line? And when would we have, could we run into a problem? Mr. Zenner is nodding his head yes. If we were to have that issue with a particular structure, which zoning would dominate?
So I think in this instance, you're looking at setbacks, so it probably wouldn't
Be behind it.
Yeah, in this instance. However, we do have other pieces of property in the city that have split zoning and much more unfavorable configurations.
Well, I'm wondering, towards the west end of the property where it wides out like 25 feet or something, we actually might have a building corner in two different zoning categories. And that's my concern, the same concern staff has with split zoning. It can create difficulties.
Yeah, we did bring that up during the review process. At this point, the only real issue would be is if you have a use that's permitted in the MC zone but not permitted in
and
the MN
zone. And that's exactly where I'm going.
Right, and I don't really think it's going to be an issue here, but we have crossed that bridge in other instances. We have a lot of property that's split zoned R2, R1. Mm-hmm. And it gets a little bit interesting, and often the director has to get pulled in, and there's a staff powwow, and it gets a
would
little bit interesting.
Would this be a director's discretion issue if we did cross the with a structure? Or do they have to come back here? And I'm wondering for the future applicant, you know what I'm saying? Do they have to go back and rezone or replat? Or
the determination of the zoning boundary lines is the discretionary call as it relates to the director's authority.
Mm-hmm.
So we would have to evaluate the historical documents associated with where that zoning line was, most likely having to remap pursuant to the ordinances that created the split situation on the property. And it's possible at that point that the mapping that's displayed on our system may not be
precise,
and that is where the director does have the authority. If it is precise or accurate, it would result in the need to either adjust the building's location to make sure that the use is entirely within the appropriate district, or seek the rezoning to clean up the piece that's MN.
All right. Would that be a map amendment then?
It would be a standard map amendment, just like any other rezoning.
All right, I'm kind of getting this on the record for, you know, 15 years from now when we go down the line and someone crosses that line. All right, thank you very much, staff and Madam Chair.
Any additional questions for Ms. Smith? Seeing none, we will open up the floor to public comment. If anyone has any public comment that they would like to make on the project, please come forward to the podium and give your name and address for the record. We do restrict comment to 3 minutes, 6 minutes if you're speaking for a group.
Hi, Madam Chair. My name is Paul Sampson, Central Missouri Professional Services, 2500 East McCarty Street, Jefferson City, Missouri. And we are a consultant for the existing owner of the property. As Ms. Smith stated, the current owners are creating this subdivision plat in order to make this a buildable lot. They currently have a contract for the sale of the property. The future owners of the property, which we have been told will be a church. Again, we don't have any, you know, once we sell the property, we don't have any, there's nothing in writing that says that, but that is what we believe the intent is. Any future development, once it is sold, would obviously have to go through the city planning process, and any rezoning at that point would be done by the future owners of the property. If there's any specific questions to the plat, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Sampson? I see none. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Any additional speakers on this case? If there aren't any, we'll close public comment. Commissioner comment. Ms. Russell.
Since there are no comments, I'm going to make a motion. In the case of 134-2021, I move to approve the Eastland Hills Plat 13 project.
Second.
Second by Mr. McMahon. We have a motion on the floor. Any discussion on that motion? Seeing none, Mr. Toohey, may we have roll call, please?
Mr. Stanton.
Yes.
Ms. Galloway-Jones.
Yes.
Ms. Rushing.
Yes.
Ms. Russell.
Yes.
My vote is yes. Ms. Burns.
Yes.
Ms. Lowe.
Yes.
Mr. McMahon.
Yes, sir.
Motion passes with 8 affirmative.
Thank you. Recommendation for approval will be forwarded to City Council. That brings us to our next case for the evening, a request by a civil group on behalf of Plumrose USA Inc. for a one-lot final minor plat consisting of 2 parcels. The 80.77 acre site is zoned IG Industrial, located on the east frontage of Paris Road, approximately 1 mile northeast of the Paris Road and US 63 interchange, and commonly addressed 5008 Paris Road. May we have a staff report, please?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. This is a request for a final minor plat, 81 acres. Sent advanced public info postcards for this on April 23rd. Sent 9 of those. I haven't had any correspondence relating to this request. To orient ourselves to the site, this is the east frontage of Paris Road, north of the 63 interchange. Looking here, it's about 51 acres being hayed right now, agricultural purposes, and there's about 18 acres of climax forest here. It's kind of split between 2 areas here. This portion, the southern portion of the site, is a wooded hillside that drains south, and I'll show later on an image, it shows a stream buffer there. In this eastern portion, it contains 2 steeper draws down here, and it's wooded as well. You can also see 2 man-made ponds on this screen, but to my knowledge, I think those have been removed at this date. And these structures here on the left, closer to the Paris Road frontage, are in the process of being removed as well. On your left, you can see an image of the stream buffer, and I'll show a holistic view of the plat when we get later to that. The purpose of this request is to bestow legal lot status on previously unplatted property. It's zoned industrial. The intent is to develop the site with a 275,000 square foot Italian meats facility. I said 325,000 on the staff report, but to my knowledge, there's 50,000 they're leaving as potential expansion. Future development of the site will be subject to the IG zoning standards, buffering, tree preservation, landscaping provisions, and the 100 foot wide stream buffer. I noted in the report that Swift Foods will be required to dedicate a sewer easement in the future. Typically, that would be dedicated on this plat, but from talking to the sewer utility engineer, there's an agreement in place basically saying that the proposed alignment of the sewer isn't ready at this time. But with that agreement, they say that Swift Foods will dedicate it in the future, and generally this location. And again, I'll show that on the plat shortly. On the Catso Major Roadway Plan, it shows a future major collector running on the southwest portion of the site briefly. With that, this will require a half width for a major collector, so they're dedicating 33 feet of half width right-of-way. That was noted on the last round of reviews, and since they'll need to be dedicating that right-of-way, they'll have to give the corner truncation as well, where that road intersects or would intersect with Paris Road. I've talked to the applicant about the need for the corner truncation, which isn't shown on the plat right now, but they assure me that they'll add it on this next submittal. So that's the reasoning for noting the technical corrections on the plat. It's just to note that corner truncation, but they will add that. The site is served by all other city utilities and requires no other infrastructure expansion at this time. And here's a whole view of the plat, so you can kind of get a better scope of the things I was talking about. At the southwest portion, you can see where the right-of-way for the major collector is being dedicated, and the red is where a corner truncation will be noted on a revised plat. Towards the center and flowing south, I mentioned, you see the type 2 stream buffer, and on the right is the potential sewer alignment. Again, I don't believe that's finalized from talking to the sewer engineer. And this straddles the western portion of that wooded hillside and draw as well, so it's pretty well at grade with most of the site before it falls down into the slope. With that, staff finds it compliant with the requirements of the UDC, subject to the technical corrections, including the corner truncation and some survey notation. Staff recommends approval of the final plat, you know, as Plumrose USA, Inc., subject to technical corrections. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Kelly. Before we move to ex parte, are there any commissioners who would like to recuse themselves from this case? Mr. Stanton.
Madam Chair, I'm going to recuse myself. I think we're company I work for is bidding for this work, so I'm going to step out.
Thank you. Anybody else? Seeing none, if any commissioners have had any ex parte related to this case, I would like to ask them to share that with the commission now so all commissioners have the benefit of the same information on the case in front of us. Seeing none, are there any questions for Mr. Kelly? Mr. McMahon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Kelly, could you, and maybe legal will have to help us here, the sewer line, It's not set in stone, but we're asking to approve it. Will that shape the nature and the verbiage of our motion?
No, I don't believe so. There's a separate agreement between the city and Swift Foods. It's ordinance or bill 9721 that says that the sewer alignment has to be substantially in this location, And they've agreed to it, so it shouldn't affect the motion.
So this may be a question that's outside of our bounds here, but maybe Mr. Zenner can answer this question. Is their CO dependent upon that sewer going where we need it to go?
Not to my knowledge. And this sewer that is proposed is actually not the sewer that is serving the site. So there is a sewer connection to the property today.
Mm-hmm.
So given the nature of the separate agreement that has already been brokered between Swift and the city, we would be confident in that agreement trumping any CO issuance with the approval of the plat. So
I feel the need to ask these questions because these folks will be generating a tremendous amount of usage on our sewer system.
And I do want to correct Pat here. So this actually would serve the site in the future, I think, due to the peak usage on this area. It would serve the site and then also greater usage for the area kind of on this industrial corridor.
So Plumrose Plus.
Yes.
So to speak. All right. I'm just a little uneasy with that not being laid out before us to this point, but maybe we can address that as we go forward. Thank you.
Ms. Galway-Jones.
I'm wondering this, I guess it's just the two technical corrections that seem a lot more than technical. What assurance do we have if we approve this tonight that the final plat will look substantially similar to this other than just they said it would? I mean, sewer easement seems like a very big deal to say approve this now and we'll put it in later.
Sure. The sewer alignment is not one of the technical corrections, to be clear. Oh. The technical corrections are just for the corner truncation. So it's a small bit of right-of-way. It's probably smaller than what I even have noted here. It's just to give a radial bit out of right-of-way for between this major collector and Paris Road. The other technical correction is just survey notations, like how large the font is.
Right, and that's what we normally think of as technical. Yeah. So the sewer is not a technical correction, and there will be nothing in our motion and recommendation to council that indicates the sewer easement issue needs to be addressed. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. I'm not comfortable with that, but I'll save that for discussion. Thank you.
And I think just for a point of clarity associated with this, when Mr. Kelly brought to me and brought to my attention the separate sanitary arrangement that currently exists between Swift and the city, and his desire to have this included within the report, it did cross my mind that this type of discussion may occur. It is not uncommon that we do have easements dedicated by separate document. And if I am not incorrect, the sewer does exist on this property, and therefore this discussion is only being brought forward for the purposes of information. The existing agreement that is in place is what's governing the future dedication of this sewer easement and its likely construction by the city. So just to say that we often take utility easements by separate document, unbeknownst to the commission, as it relates to platted property. And so this is not an oddity. We felt that it was important to at least acknowledge the fact that this easement would be here within this particular area, but covered under a different agreement.
Ms. Galway-Jones, do you have a follow-up question?
Yes, so now I've heard two things. Is this easement to service this property or not?
Yes, partially.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. McMahon?
Just a point of information for Manager Zenner. Yeah, I'm aware of that, Mr. Zenner. Given the example we currently have, Oscar Mayer, they use lots of water, they use lots of sewer. we've given these folks a lot of money. It's a due diligence thing here, something we wouldn't normally, you know, if this was 15 acres and 8 homes or whatever, it wouldn't be as much of an issue. They're going to have a high demand for sewage usage, and we need to be responsible stewards. That's why I'm bringing this up.
Any additional questions for staff? Seeing none, we will open up the floor to public comments. If anyone has any comments they would like to make, please give your name and address for the record.
Chair and commission members, name's Kevin Murphy, A Civil Group, 3401 Broadway Business Park Court. To kind of clarify, I guess, a little bit, if I can, the sewer is required for this property. This project could not happen without that sewer. They have a separate agreement already by ordinance with City Council that they will provide this easement. It's just a timing issue. The city isn't prepared to define this alignment quite at this time, but they are prepared to start construction, hopefully, under the good faith that the city does get this design and done. So actually they're taking a big chance with doing this. So they definitely will dedicate this easement. They're obligated to by their agreement. The truncation, again, that was the right-of-way on the south end, just some discussion about that, and it was a late comment, a bit of a late comment to address, and the truncation was just a missed object, which is already cleared. I had trouble, I would have had it, had trouble getting it printed off and to get it signed today, so we'll get it turned in tomorrow. All I have any questions, if you have any.
Any additional questions for Mr. Murphy? I see none. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any additional speakers on this case? If there aren't any, we will close public comment. Commissioner comment.
Excuse me.
Ms. Russell?
I'll just make a motion. In the case of 142-2021, I move to approve the requested final minor plat of Plum Rose USA, Inc., subject to technical corrections.
Second.
Second by Ms. Burns. We have a motion on the floor. Any discussion on that motion? Ms. Galway-Jones.
I don't know exactly how to put what I want to say into words, but it feels like this was brought perhaps prematurely or something, but I like the project. I don't have a problem with the final plat. I am uncomfortable, I think, with it feels a little cart before the horse, but maybe that's my inexperience. At any rate, unless my fellow commissioners would correct me on this, it feels odd to have something this major left to other action and put an amendment on the plat later, but that's all. It just feels weird.
Any additional comments? Seeing none. Mr. Tuohy, may we have roll call, please?
Yep. Ms. Galway-Jones?
Yes.
Ms. Rushing?
Oh, yes.
Ms. Russell?
Yes.
I vote yes. Ms. Burns?
Yes.
Ms. Lowe?
Yes.
Mr. McMahon?
Yes.
Motion passes 7-0.
Recommendation for approval will be forwarded to City Council. That brings us to our public hearings for the evening. Case 136-2021. A request by the City of Columbia to amend Chapter 29, Sections 29-1.11, Definitions, 29-3.2, Permitted Use Table, and 29-3.3, use-specific standards, related to the retail, general, personal services, office, physical fitness center, and artisan industries uses. Revisions also include a new use to be called accessory commercial kitchen. May we have a staff report, please?
Yes, Madam Chair. Thank you. And Rachel and I are going to be kind of tag teaming this as we've worked on this together. So, this is the second phase of the UDC amendments that we're working on. These amendments are going to relate to zoning-related items, mostly dealing with definitions, how those uses are permitted, and then additional standards or design criteria that may be associated with those. We really began working on this last year when we kind of went into the stay-at-home order, and the staff began researching a large number of these topics. And then towards the end of the year, we started drafting some draft amendments, and then we brought those to you at four work sessions at the beginning of this year. So we've been kind of going back and forth on these, you know, rolling over on them and kind of hammering at the kinks, so to speak. We posted this on the city website at the beginning of April. We published it in the newspaper on the 2nd of May, and we solicited out a lot of input through some stakeholder lists. I think about near 3,000 individuals, organizations, and businesses were collected. That involves Chamber of Commerce, Work by Faith, the Community Improvement Districts, the Loop, the Downtown CID as well, and a number of other stakeholders, including local developers. We have 4 minutes that we're bringing to you. I'm going to cover the first two, and then Rachel's going to cover the former two. You're going to see some text in here that is going to show some code. Additions are going to be in bold. Deletions are going to be in strike through. And what you're going to see in blue are some minor changes we've made since we've sent out the public hearing drafts, because we've gotten a couple comments in from staff, internal staff, from you guys, and then from law department as well. The first one is accessory commercial kitchens. It's a little background when we're looking at this. This originally came to council. A church and the Missouri Women's Business Center were working together and trying to find a way to use the kitchen space in a church to kind of facilitate the mission of their organization. It's in a residential zone, and because of that, they weren't permitted to use the kitchen there for a commercial kitchen. So they're discussing this at council. The idea was, we like the idea, you know, supports a lot of goals, but, you know, what about potential impacts to the neighborhood? So they kind of put this on P&Z to look at it, research it, and potentially develop a way that could fulfill those goals while mitigating any impacts and providing some safeguards that would provide some reassurances to the neighborhood. So this amendment would permit commercial kitchens as accessory use in residential zones, so those community-serving facilities like churches, religious institutions, or schools could lease out their underutilized kitchen space with those safeguards in place. Currently, commercial kitchens are a customary accessory use associated with restaurants, so in like the mixed-use zones like MN, MC, etc. And there's an abundance of kitchen space in residential zones, but like I said, it's not allowed to be used. This amendment creates a new definition for accessory commercial kitchen, permits it in R1, R2, RMF, and RMH as an accessory use subject to use-specific standards. We reached out to Live Well by Faith and other community groups. Since we posted the draft, we've had a few business license requests come in for food trucks, other food establishments trying to use kitchen spaces for this purpose, or kitchen spaces in, you know, churches for this purpose, but we haven't been able to approve those yet because, you know, this hasn't been brought to you, hasn't been brought to council yet. We also worked really closely with the health department because they have to deal with commissary agreements and things like that to ensure that kitchen space is inspected. You know, they kind of make sure that the kitchens aren't overutilized as well, which is like one thing we were concerned with. We didn't want to have these kitchens being overutilized with tons of users that they couldn't handle, especially in a neighborhood setting. So we worked really closely to make sure our policy was consistent with what they were doing. So I'm going to go through and start to show you part of the code that we've had. Like I said, additions are in bold, omissions are in strike through. Anything in blue is just some clerical changes that we've made since then. If you want me to read verbatim these changes, I can, but I think I'll just paraphrase for now. Like I said, this allows those churches to lease out this underutilized space to food establishments like food trucks or caterers, that kind of thing. And those establishments also include like religious institutions, schools, daycare facilities, food establishments. FYI, they're defined in the City of Columbia Food Code. You see some changes in blue. I kind of moved the wording around just to make it a clear definition. And I believe one of the commissioners noted as well that commissaries aren't defined in the food code. Our law department actually noticed that yesterday as well, so we kind of already had a heads up. It is a term used by the health department. It's used in a lot of their documents, especially the commissary agreement. But because it's not defined, I took it out and just replaced that with kitchen for now. So it's just clerical and just making it a better definition. Again, it is proposed to be an accessory use in R1, R2, RMF, and RMH. Proposed to prohibit direct sales on the premises. Food and drinks must be sold or served at an offsite location. We discussed the hours of operation. Again, make sure that there's safeguards there for the neighborhood. Ensuring that you know, the parking's already there existing, but they don't need to provide any additional parking for this. And then we kind of get into the more meat of this, I would say. So we have some size limitations that would apply to these areas. In the R1 and R2 districts, for sites on local residential streets, we're saying they can't lease out more kitchen space than 5% of the gross floor area of the building. And for sites taking access from other streets, like a collector or an arterial, they couldn't occupy more than 10% of the building, more than 500 square feet, whichever is greater. And that's to provide a floor, actually, rather than a lesser. So that was intentional. In the RMF and RMH districts, these use may not occupy more than 10% of the gross floor area, similar to what was on the previous, if it was on a larger street. You noticed in blue, just added gross, just a clerical error, fixing that. And again, the Department of Public Health and Human Services deals a lot with this. They're really on the front end. They're the ones that go out and inspect these kitchens. They already deal with this, so we're just making sure that, making these applicants aware that they'll be dealing with them as well. The second amendment is for arts and industry. This use allows less intense cottage type production, which may include manufacturing, storage, warehouse, production, and shipping. Really, when we're looking at this, I began looking closely at MN because it's currently a use that is permitted in mixed use districts but doesn't have any use specific standards. We began looking at this because Smart Growth America and the Loop CID worked together on a project to look at small-scale manufacturing, how that could improve economic revitalization in Colombia. With all the research they went to, it provided a set of recommendations for the Loop on really use-specific standards, but they're kind of more tailored to the Loop. So I looked at that as a good starting point, but kind of tried to look at the rest of the city and see what would, you know, apply better for a citywide amendment. One of the main things I noticed and that they pointed out as well in their recommendations was currently artisans and craftspersons are limited to hand tools and minimal automation. That was a big barrier for them, for the artisans and craftspersons. This amendment revises the definition to remove that limitation, and it creates two subdivisions or sub-definitions so that the impacts of more intensive arts industries can be regulated appropriately, and it creates use-specific standards so that these uses can be integrated appropriately into those settings like MN. We worked with the Loop CID to talk about the kind of the changes we were making to their revisions. We spoke to them a few times back and forth, and we even had them at a work session to kind of talk about it. And since we've developed this draft, they're happy with it, and I believe they're here, and they wish to speak about it as well. So let's input from local developers. I think we had a couple questions from. Sent out solicitation to Arts and Industries, the other CID, and the Chamber of Commerce, as well as the rest of the groups. Again, we'll go through the text, and I'll probably paraphrase quite a bit here, just because I know what's going to come up is going to be a little lengthy. So there is an existing definition for arts industry, but we made a lot of changes to it, and for the sake of having a legible document here, just strike that through and provided a new definition. I say the main thing that you're going to see here is just the removal of hand tools, the limitation of hand tools, and minimal automation. And then the next substantial change is the creation of two subdivisions for Class 1 and Class 2 artisan uses. Class 1 is for minimally intensive things like small-scale arts, crafts, food and beverage, small-batch bakeries, microbreweries, that kind of thing. And then Class 2 is for heavier, more intensive artisan uses. This could be small-scale welding, metalworking, glassworking, and firing of pottery. On the permitted use table, this use is already permitted in all of the zones. We're just adding a C, so it's a C/P now, just to indicate that, as you know, we've talked about, there are a lot of opportunities for these arts industries where they may want to request a conditional use permit. Let's say if it's an existing business that may want to expand, and I'll elaborate on this here in a second, but if they don't quite, if they're existing but they may wish to expand, they can apply for a conditional use permit. So in the MN district, we're proposing that Class 1 uses be limited to 5,000 square feet per use. A single structure containing more than this, but each artisan or tenant is limited to 5,000 square feet. So you could have, let's say, five tenants for a total of 25,000 square feet, but 5,000 would be the max for any of them, if that makes sense. And then Class 2 uses would not be permitted in MN without a CUP. In MC, MDT, and MBP, Class 1 uses would be limited to 15,000 square feet each. Similar thing, could be any number of tenants, as long as each tenant doesn't exceed 15,000 square feet, and they could apply for a conditional use permit if they needed to exceed that. Where we kind of need to provide some clarity, because this does get a little messy, is for Class 2 uses in MC, MDT, and MBP, each use is limited to 15,000 square feet each, but a structure is limited to 30,000 square feet total if there's a Class 2 use there. So if it's a Class 2 use and a Class 1 use together in those districts, then that structure is limited to 30,000 square feet. And if they wanted to exceed that, then they would need to request a conditional use permit. The NICU specific standard I have here is something we typically don't do, but we were talking about conditional use permits a lot. We wanted to give guidance for what some of these artisans would want to submit or look at for their conditional use permits. So we're really interested in the specific types of uses and kind of the compatibility of those uses within each structure, like internal to the artisan use and then to the surroundings as well. We also want to look at the number of tenants, common or shared use of spaces and tools, operating plans or house rules that they have available, like Orr Street Studio have, for example. We'll be interested in the adaptive reuse or repurposing of buildings. And particularly for businesses that are wishing to expand, we'd look at current or previous complaints or code violations, such as overparking, traffic issues, or noise. So if there's a business right now that, or an arts industry right now that exists, but if they want to expand, they would exceed these limitations. They could apply for a conditional use permit. We kind of look at their history, look at their operations, and see if there's been any issues, and see if there'd be potentially be any issue with a minor expansion. That's why that's in there. And this is correcting a formatting error as well in the blue when we uploaded it, kind of got switched around. But because this isn't as intensive as a heavy industry, like extraction of raw materials, that kind of thing, we don't think it should be screened in that same manner. So recommending that this be considered a commercial use for the purposes of screening. Loading dock deliveries shall conform provisions of the UDC. No outside storage shall be allowed. And I'll turn it over to Rachel for the following two amendments.
So amendment three are proposed amendments to the personal service, office, and physical fitness center uses are already described in the code. The biggest intent of this is that we do a lot of business license review, and as times change, we have challenges sometimes classifying different uses into different zones. For instance, I mentioned this in one of the work sessions, nowhere in the code do we define spa services for humans. We only define spa services for small animals. So when we get an application for a spa, we have a challenge on understanding or describing where that can go within the city relative to our zoning code. So we've been keeping notes of the last few years, and it's time to just modernize our definitions. We've also had issues figuring out exactly what is a medical office versus a regular office versus a gym versus a spa versus a salon. So helping to figure out where that line is something that's come up. So that's one of the intents of this amendment. The other one is really coming from recent experiences from folks applying for CUPs, conditional use permits, to operate a barbershop or a salon in the MOF mixed-use office zone. So presently, you have to get a conditional use permit in order to do that, but we've heard from some folks, especially smaller operators, that their impact is very low, that it's very expensive and difficult to find commercially zoned property when they only need a very small spot, and that they'd really like to be where people are working so that folks can get a haircut on their lunch break, etc. So the intent of this definition is to provide a set of standards or guidelines that would allow these smaller scale, less impactful barbers, beauty shops, and salons to go into the MOF mixed-use office zone by right without having to get a CUP. The bigger, more intensive operations could potentially still go in the MOF if they got a CUP. So we kind of set where that line is in these specific standards. And I will note that use specific standard 2933V is where you see the personal service use specific standards, and we'll go more into that. So in terms of public input, we relied heavily upon existing businesses within the city. So we got lists of barbers, salons, beauty shops, offices, gyms, yoga studios, et cetera, from the business license office. And so we were able to send out a lot of public input to very targeted users. I did hear early on that we needed to be clear that we are not looking at the home occupation standards for home-based personal service businesses. We have a lot of folks who have, you know, one beauty salon chair in their garage, or they do online yoga or whatever, and they were concerned that we were forcing them to go into an office zone. And so I took a step back and took that to mean that we weren't communicating properly, that in fact, actually, when you are so wildly successful that you can no longer be in your home, that we're actually making it a little bit easier for you to find your next spot and by allowing you to go in office zone rather than going straight to commercial. Once that was explained, and then from folks who just had general inquiry, we did have generally very positive input to that effect, that folks are very interested in some smaller scale office types of environments, especially when they're first starting out. There's a lot of barriers to entry that this would help. As Brad said, with the commercial kitchens, we've had some business licenses right now that are on hold because we have folks who are trying to locate a personal service business in an office zone. And so they're anxiously awaiting the results of this evening and then the July City Council potential approval. Okay, so we're looking at the permitted use table here, the definitions, and then as well as that use specific standard V. So this is mostly just cleanup and then clarification. Physical therapists were in kind of a weird situation previously in that, you know, they're a licensed medical practitioner, but the code did not explicitly say that they could go in office zone. Because they're a licensed medical practitioner, we see no difference between a physical therapist, a dentist, a chiropractor, or a medical doctor, as far as the applicability of them being a medical provider. This also opens up some other spa types of services if they are performed, not so much for cosmetic, but more for medical purposes under the direct supervision of a licensed medical professional. And then accountants was just in there twice. Okay, then looking at the definition for personal services general, this describes what those are and also what they are not. And so, and also had offices in here as well, which was sort of redundant. As well. Okay, and then in terms of physical fitness center, we didn't have Pilates or yoga accounted for in the code, and we have a lot of operators, and it seems like that is one of our predominant business license approvals that really came up and was a question as well. And so that is added into physical fitness center with the caveat that if someone is a medical professional who is prescribing yoga for medical purposes, then they would potentially fall under the office zone as well. And so here in the code, you can see going from a C, which is conditional use, to a P/C and the MOF for personal services. So what that really means is that you're subject to use specific standard V. That really describes where the line is on whether you're P or if you exceed what is permitted by right in the use specific standard in terms of scale or intensity, then you might potentially pursue a conditional use process. Okay, so under use specific standard V, the first standard remains you cannot involve the use of explosive or hazardous materials. So we did have some discussion at the work sessions on exactly what hazardous materials are. It's not well defined in our code. There are also some interesting definitions in state laws as well. At this time, we're not really ready, I think, to dive into that because hazardous materials means different things to different persons under different contexts and different codes. So we haven't touched that at this point, but there was discussion about with this body about what that could mean. So the new additions are in the MOF district, a personal service will not exceed a gross floor area of 2,500 square feet. The research that we conducted, and then after talking to some folks, 2,500 is pretty standard or even a really good size for a nail salon, a barber, et cetera. That's about 10 chairs, to put it into perspective. So about 10 beauticians or barbers and 10 chairs. A single structure could have up to two units of 5,000 square feet of GFA, or if they were smaller, which is often the case, you could have 5 1,000 square foot tenant spaces, for instance, as well. So it would allow for some flexibility and some co-location benefits. If folks want to exceed either 2,500 per suite or more than 5,000 per building, then they would be available to pursue the conditional use permit process for the MOF zone. I will say, too, that there is still commercially zoned property available to larger operators without a CUP. So if someone is wildly successful and they're no longer the best fit in the MOF district, and a CUP is not a great option, then they can pursue going to the MN mixed-use neighborhood or MC mixed-use commercial zone. Additionally, they may not include the sale of alcohol beverages because we don't permit alcohol beverage sales in the MOF district. And then third, there's a limitation on the amount of the display of products sold at retail. So incremental or incidental retail sales is pretty typical for these kind of salons, barbers, spas, et cetera. But because retail is not the primary use of this zone, it should be secondary to the actual service, personal service use. Okay, so then Amendment 4 is the use specific standard for retail general. So this is actually pretty basic and simple, hopefully. The code presently already has a different parking threshold or requirement for retail large versus retail small in terms of the required amount of off or on-site parking that is required, but it doesn't tell you how to use that or when to apply it. So the big idea here across the country and throughout many decades of research is that typically larger retailers have a little bit different parking demand than smaller retailers. So when you go to IKEA, for instance, a lot of times you go with your whole family, a couple of your friends, you're there for a really long time, you're looking at very large things, and the turnover in the parking lot is just not quite the same if you're going to Dollar General after work to pick something up. When you see smaller retailers, you typically have just more turnover in the amount of time that folks spend, and so you need a little bit higher parking ratio for that small retail. But the code didn't really tell us exactly where the line was. And so before this code amendment, we worked with the building and site folks, and we worked with the development community on a couple of projects and tried to figure out where that was and realized that this was an issue that we needed to define exactly where that line would be. So the simplest way to address this was just to put a clarifying clause in the existing use-specific standard for retail general. We are proposing 15,000 gross floor area as that threshold between small and retail. We do kind of break it down on how if there's co-located smaller retail together, they often just sort of have that impact of becoming more regional just by virtue of being together. And so there is some ways to utilize co-location to get to that smaller parking standard versus a standalone single use. So we have some clarity in terms of how we define and how we limit individual retail uses versus total uses within a single building, and then also how that relates to parking. We didn't get any specific impact or input from the design professionals during this round, but as I said, we've talked to Crockett Engineering specifically about this and a couple others, and generally 15,000 was seen as appropriate in every discussion that I have had with the development community on the difference between small and large retail. So having these here, the first one deals with a single structure. This is some clarification that has come up in the past. So a single structure can have more retail in the MN and MBP districts, but that a single retail use is what is limited, not what's within the entire building. And then four, that's that clause just determining that 15,000 square feet gross floor area is the determination for large parking en masse. So I think we'd like to take questions, and Madam Chair, I will defer to you on how you want to organize comments, questions, et cetera. But we are going to ask for a recommendation of approval as the amendments have been presented and amended by us, and then also by any amendments that are proposed by this body this evening, so that we can then prepare a draft for council that reflects the will of this body with any additional amendments from what was published to your agenda.
So would you like a motion for each proposed amendment?
A1, yes. If it could be A1, A2, A3, and A4, that would be wonderful.
All right. Any questions for staff? Mr. McMahon.
a comment mostly. I'd like to thank Manager Zenner for not giving us 15 of these. And I would also like to thank Planner Kelly and Planner Smith. You guys, you went down the rabbit hole on this. There's a lot of arcana that you pulled up, and you've looked at a lot of possibilities. That doesn't mean it's perfect, but I appreciate the work that you guys have done. I know it's been a lot. Thank you very much.
That was an easy question. Any other questions for staff? If not, we will open up the floor to public comment. Anyone who has comments on these proposed amendments, please give your name and address for the record.
Wonderful. It's Carrie Gartner. I'm the executive director of the Business Loop CID. It's 601 Business Loop 70 West, 65203. I'm here to speak on the artisan industry amendments. This was something that came out of a grant we received from the EDA, where we had Smart Growth America come and do a six-month planning process for artisan industries and small-scale manufacturing. It did include a substantial amount of public input and comment. We spoke to close to 250 makers and artisans and manufacturers. We asked them how they worked, how they set up their shops. We asked them what they needed, and that's how we drafted this. So it came together in our economic development plan, approved by our board, submitted to both this body and to the city council. So there's been a lot of work done on this, and most definitely staff has been super helpful. We are very supportive of this. We do think this is the way forward to really help create a hub for makers and manufacturers and food producers on the business loop as a way to revitalize the area and create jobs and new businesses. We do have three shared spaces on the street right now, a shared commercial kitchen. VidWest has a public video recording and podcasting studio. And coming online soon is the Mac Lab, Mobile Area Community College's makerspace. It is our hope that these spaces can incubate small businesses that can then find space on the street. And the revisions of this will allow them to find a place on the street and grow in place without having to upend all of their operations the minute they get successful enough to need a little bit more space. We also appreciate the conditional use guidelines in this that helps create a framework for that discussion about conditional use. Again, it's very hard to upend your business when you're successful enough to grow, and we just don't want to see that happen. So we are very supportive of this. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them now, but I think staff has done an excellent job explaining everything.
Thank you, Ms. Gardner. Are there any questions for this speaker?
Thank you.
I see none. Thank you. So since we haven't categorized comments, I just want to, for the group, that was in support of A2. All right. We're just taking comments globally since it looks like a relatively contained audience. Any other public comments? A very contained audience. All right. There's no more comments. We'll close public comment. Commissioner comment. Ms. Burns.
I just wanted to share for the public that we did spend work sessions on this, and we did have a thorough discussion. So please don't take our lack of questions or comments or whatever for not a lack of knowledge. But the staff has been incredibly thorough, both here and previously. And so I'm very comfortable with what's being presented tonight.
Mr. McMahon.
That said, thank you, Commissioner. If there are no more questions on item A1, I would like to make a motion. In the matter of case 1362021, A1, create accessory commercial kitchen and create use-specific standards, I move to approve said zoning text amendment.
Second.
Second by Ms. Rushing. We have a motion on the floor. Any discussion on this motion? I see none. Mr. Toohey, may we have roll call, please?
Mr. Stanton.
Yes.
Ms. Galloway Jones?
Yes.
Ms. Rushing?
Yes.
Ms. Russell?
Yes.
My vote is yes. Ms. Burns?
Yes.
Ms. Lowe?
Yes.
Mr. McMahon?
Aye.
Motion carries with 8 votes yes.
Thank you. 3 more to go, guys.
I think Ms. Burns should do the artisan industry.
All right. Ms. Burns.
In the case of 136-2021, a request by the City of Columbia to amend Chapter 29, Sections 29-1.11, 29-3.2, 29-3.3, related to retail, general, personal services, office, physical fitness center, and artisan industry uses. Amendment 2, I move to approve.
Second.
Okay, we have a second by Mr. Stanton. Just a clarification, this one's just on the artisan industry.
Yes.
Amendment 2A, or A2. All right. We have a motion on the floor. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, Mr. Toohey.
Mr. Stanton.
Yes.
Ms. Galloway Jones.
Yes.
Ms. Rushing?
Yes.
Ms. Russell?
Yes.
My vote is yes. Ms. Burns?
Yes.
Ms. Lowe?
Yes.
Mr. McMahon?
Yes, sir.
Another 8-0 in approval.
Ms. Lowe, can you?
Yes.
Can you indicate who made the second on that motion, please?
Mr. Stanton.
Thank you.
Only 2 more chances left, Ms. Lee.
Of course I have to make a motion.
Please, Ms. Russell, make a motion.
Let's let her do the last one.
All right.
Mr. McMahon, and then...
As a matter of... It would be an honor to do A3 so that Commissioner Russell on her last meeting could do A4. In the matter of 136-20-21... A3, to amend the zoning code, to provide a zoning code amendment to permit small-scale personal services in mixed-use office without a conditional use and modernized personal services, office-based physical fitness, and their use definitions. I move to approve.
Second.
Second by Mr. Stanton. We have a motion on the floor. Any discussion? Seeing none, Mr. Toohey.
Mr. Stanton.
Yes.
Ms. Galloway Jones.
Yes.
Ms. Rushing.
Yes.
Ms. Russell.
Yes.
My vote is yes. Ms. Burns.
Yes.
Ms. Lowe.
Yes.
Mr. McMahon.
Aye.
3-3, 8-0.
All right, Ms. Lee.
Okay, in the case 136-2021, amendment A4, revised use specific standards AA for retail and general, I move to approve.
Second.
Mr. McMahon. We have a motion on the floor. Any discussion on that motion? Seeing none, Mr. Toohey.
Mr. Stanton.
Yes.
Ms. Galloway Jones.
Yes.
Ms. Rushing.
Yes.
Ms. Russell.
Yes.
My vote is yes. Ms. Burns?
Yes.
Ms. Lowe?
Yes.
Mr. McMahon?
Yes, sir.
Motion passes 8-0.
Recommendation to approve the amendments will be forwarded to City Council. That brings us to the end of our meeting. Any public comments? Seeing none, any staff comments?
Say that with such great trepidation. Though our 2 departing commissioners may appreciate that this may be their last entertainment activity for a Planning Commission meeting. Yes, we do have comments. We never will forbid them not to be given. Your next meeting is the 10th of June, and it will be a wingdinger of a meeting, let me tell you. But before we have that meeting, we will be going ahead and having a work session at 5:30. Hopefully you enjoyed your buffet style this evening, because we will continue with the party as we are able to entertain different food choices moving forward. We also will discuss probably topics that we did not get to this evening, such as the communications to City Council regarding upcoming potential text changes and a request for authorization to proceed forward, as well as we may have additional information to provide you as it relates to other relevant topics that we're currently working on. We do have several items on the upcoming agenda. Several is maybe an understatement. If you want to go to the next slide, that is your agenda.
But you did, Pat.
I know. I apologize. I apologize. I'm sadistic, but we had to do this. So I don't think we have seen an agenda like this since I requested you all to come in at the end of December. And we've got a number that are actually, we've had two firsts before, but now I think this is the first that we have a threefer. And that is actually the public hearings and subdivision section 107 through 105. And you may say, why is it in reverse order? Well, they build upon each other. But you do have one subdivision action for the 10th. Then we will have the threefer, which are all out at Old Hawthorne, which has a rezoning request, which allows for connectivity to be created to a potential permanent zoning site, which has an annexation component associated with it. And then you will have a preliminary plat showing how all of that to be annexed property may be able to be developed. And then we go into our regular public hearings. Tis the season for conditional use approvals. As you can see, we have two of them in that batch. And then we have two major PD plan revisions, as well as a rezoning request out of plan district to the O zoning district. If we advance to the next slide, we'll show you some of the highlights. Here is our 1005 Cherry Street final plat with a design adjustment. As many of you may or may not be aware, this is a proposed future hotel site right now. The building has been removed from the site as shown in this aerial, and we are looking at conferring legal lot status on the property pursuant to the platting action. And then, due to the fact that this is in the MDT, it is our standard utility easement vacation request. Which, now that I say that,
Design adjustment.
And now that I say that, that will be a topic that will be in your next batch of text changes.
Thank you.
So I hopefully beat Mr. McMahon to the point. If we advance to the next slide, this is your threefer. All out at Old Hawthorne on your far left-hand slide. That is a rezoning of common lots between two different planned district properties. There are, if I'm not incorrect, three parcels engaged there, and the property immediately to the north of the red line is actually the acreage that is proposed to be permanently zoned, which is in the center slide, and then that same acreage is proposed to be preliminarily platted into a residential subdivision of mixed lot sizes. That's the next slide. This is the rezoning request for Old Hawthorne. Its current amenity center. I'm not incorrect.
No.
Which one am I looking at?
No, this is the Arbor Falls Major.
I'm sorry,
P
Arbor Falls. It looked familiar. Like the shape. I'm not seeing the picture in my mind. This is Arbor Falls. This is a PD. It is a PD major PD revision to reallocate the western half of the existing property that's currently improved with duplexes and what's referred to as the big house out at Old Hawthorne into individual single-family lots, along with some in common parking structures that will be dividing the two developments. So this is a PD plan revision. There is a corresponding easement vacation for utilities that is not processed by the commission but is going through City Council. So we are in the process of preparing that right now. And then our two projects at Old Hawthorne Amenities. This is currently plan zone property. Proposed to be rezoned to O, open space, and the conditional use associated with this is to allow for outdoor recreation, which is currently what the property is generally utilized for, the tennis courts, the pool. They are looking at doing expansion of the amenity center over time and the application of the PD zoning on it, given the variability to how those facilities may be constructed given the needs of the residents within Old Hawthorne is somewhat of an impediment in being able to allow that to happen more fluidly as the neighborhood demands particular facilities to be added. So the zoning to O is an appropriate accommodation for what they would like to do with it. Recreation, private recreation is one of the purposes for O. The conditional use allows for outdoor recreation, and that conditional use has the opportunity for the Planning Commission to consider particular aspects of what the PD plan currently provides in the way of adjoining property protections, screening, buffering, lighting, and other things should the Commission desire to apply supplemental conditions beyond what our current code would generally require. So you will have the opportunity to consider the impacts that an open zoned amenity facility in the middle of the neighborhood may create. And then moving on to the next set of slides, we have a CUP, and our second CUP on the agenda is for an ADU at 504 Parkside Drive. Parkade Boulevard, I apologize. And then our final rezoning request is down at Discovery, and you will probably be pleasantly surprised when you see this plan. It actually does have a mixture of product uses on the property that range from a hotel to a 90,000 square foot office building, which has got a opportunity to accommodate significant player within our overall community. I'd like to point out to you that you will see within the next month on the opposite corner to the south a new plan that we will be bringing in, which is designed more so for amenities as it relates to this particular area, and be prepared to see a little bit of something different than what we have traditionally seen out here in the past. We also are working on a couple of other amendments that you'll be seeing also to relate with some other development that is out at the Discovery Project as well. Those are your projects for the June 10th meeting. It should be a long meeting, so we will not feed you heavy foods for that night, and we will have coffee. With that being said, this evening is somewhat bittersweet for some of us that have had an opportunity to work with the two commissioners that are sitting on the dais closest to staff, Mr. Toohey and Ms. Russell. This is their last meeting. I would like to inform the commission that we have had two appointments made at Monday night's meeting to replace Mr. Toohey and Ms. Russell, Peggy Plasiard and Robin Kimball. Our replacements, and they have been welcomed to the commission through my standard email, and we are looking forward to having them in attendance on the 10th. Do a little bit of probably training and some other introductions as we normally do as part of our work session to bring them into the fold and hopefully have them become productive commissioners. But with that being said, it was with my greatest appreciation to Mr. Toohey as well as Ms. Russell for having served with you for the years that you have been here, your faithful service to come to us even during COVID and a variety of other instances. You guys have carried the water on a number of great projects that we have brought forward, the UDC being one of them. You were troopers through that process and have provided us invaluable knowledge as it relates to the real estate industry. As well, and for that I am greatly appreciative, and we wish you the best of luck as you move forward and to bring me a open schedule on Thursday nights every other week. Thank you very much.
So moving on to commissioner comments, it is with heartfelt gratitude for your friendship and years of dedication to this group that we part ways with Lee Russell and Brian Toohey. We will miss your astute insights, and we wish you all the best. Motion making won't be the same without you. So, any other commissioner comments? Mr. Stanton.
Mr. Toohey, Ms. Russell, I will miss you. Mr. Toohey, man, I won't have anybody else to go toe-to-toe with, and work sessions. You have been a wonderful antagonist, and I've learned a lot from you, and I hope you've learned a lot from me. So wish you good luck in your future endeavors, and hope to see you in the street somewhere, building houses somewhere. Nah, we can make it happen. Thank you.
Mr. McMahon?
I'd like to reserve the last of our council or commission comments for our two departing commissioners. I have two things business-related real quick. We'll get them out of the way. Pat, who's the agent on the Odles property? Do you know?
Crockett's office?
And Anderson and Crockett intermittently these days, so it could be either one, depending on which one it is.
Which project?
That one. The hotel.
The hotel, that is...
That's Crockett's office.
All right. And actually, Crockett's office is also the one that is working on the newest Discovery project.
Just as a heads up, Mr. Stevenson called me at work today, and we had a joyous conversation about brownfield development and infill, and I know Lee is going to miss this. I didn't give him any specific information on any particular cases. Just to give you guys a heads up, that he and Mr. Nadier and some other folks, and to you, Pat, to also, he expressed his concerns to me, and we had a good philosophical discussion. And I suggested that he speak to some of his fellow developers and property owners and then come see us with his concerns. Some of the same problems that we've addressed, the lot's not 60 feet wide or 80 feet wide or, these kind of issues. But we talked for about a half hour. I just want to let you guys know that Mark reached out to me. Now I'm done.
Any other comments?
First of all, Mr. Zenner, your staff is phenomenal. They have come prepared. They give us great information. It really is easy for us to have work sessions and speak up here and know what we're doing. And it's because you and your staff, Mr. Teddy, they are a phenomenal group. So I want to thank you very much for 7 years of terrific information. To my fellow commissioners, I want to thank you for coming prepared, for giving us all great insight. We had differing views, but thank you. Those of us that went through the UDO code, special place in my heart for that. It'll, I think I can look back on it and laugh now. But that's been 2 o'clock in the morning was really different here. So I just want to leave you with one thought, and it's may all your decisions end up as a win-win.
So, Pat, I hope you keep returning my phone calls when I'm no longer a commissioner. So, but I do want to thank the staff. You guys have always been very helpful, great at answering questions, especially in those late nights when you had to be here with us, especially going through the UDO. I don't think I ever was sicker in my entire life than after one of those marathon sessions the next day. So glad that's over. To all of you, it's great to get to meet all of you. I'll miss seeing you every other Thursday night. Lee and I plan to go to dinner every once in a while together.
On Thursday nights
while you guys are here. So we'll still have our own little P&Z meeting. Thank God we're not going to be at that next one. So thanks, and I will see you guys all around, and maybe sometime I'll be out there making public comments on some of the things you'll be debating. So thanks again.
Thank you. Seriously, thank you. We will miss you.
Ms. Russell, I think you should lead us out.
Okay. My last time. I move to adjourn.
Do it, Anthony.
Second by Mr. Stanton. We're adjourned.